Okay, let's just start from here and see where
one more take.
We won't stop. Oh, Dan, I saw you about 3 weeks ago out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, that was out in Concord in East Bay.
I see. So I think everyone that listens to this podcast knows that you live in San Francisco. How far is Concord from you?
Yeah, so it's about a 30-mile trip. But really around here, the distance doesn't matter so much as how I need to get there. So it's really a number of trains. If I can get there in one train, it's a fast and smooth ride. If I need to switch trains, then it takes a lot longer.
So let me ask, how many modes of transportation did you use? And I want to know if you got a Taco Bell subscription yet, so you can at least stay satiated on your pilgrimage.
Yeah, right. No, I had to settle for just a croissant from the local cafe.
Okay.
I have a Taco Bell subscription. Love to get one. But I did go to Taco Bell after our last podcast. That really made me hungry for some tacos. But so I walked to the train station, the BART, Bay Area Rapid Transit, then just took one train out to Concord. Then from Concord Station, where we went, Gomentum Station, it's the vehicle testing center. It's really out in this deserted remote area where there's this naval weapons facility. Really quite cool. But the thing is, it's pretty remote, and the only way to get there is by Uber.
And how long was the Uber ride?
The Uber ride should have taken 10 minutes, but it took longer because I ended up getting in a fight with my Uber driver.
What? How?
So location, even on the maps, when you look at it on Google Maps or on the Uber app, it's just this, there's really nothing there, and there's a small road. And that's where the address was that I wanted to go to. But he passed by it and thought, you know, no way anybody wants to go to this place. So he kept driving and to drop me off at this apartment complex that was a little further down the road. And I tried to tell him, no, I'm not going to a residence like this. I'm going to that remote road back there. And he wouldn't leave me. He argued. He was convinced that nope, I have to go to this small little road. So I really had to fight with him to get me to take me there.
Geez, I guess any mode of transportation has its pros and cons.
Yeah, you have to think about, you know, there's time and cost, but there's also what's going to be convenient and easy to do. So I actually spent a lot of time thinking about all the different ways that I could, all the modes I could use to get to where I'm going, especially in South Bay, when you have Caltrain, BART, you can always take an Uber. It's a lot of options.
That's true. So it looks like choosing your mode of transportation is a very complex optimization problem, but your problem is kind of an individual problem, right? Imagine if you were Amazon or FedEx or DoorDash or Uber. It must be impossible to solve the optimization problem, which I think is what's your best cost, what's your best route, how you can save the most gas. There's just so many iterations. It never ends. But that's good for us today, because today we have the CEO of MEM Computing, John Bean. How are you doing today, John?
Hey, I'm great. Thank you.
Great. Good. Good to have you today. It's a pleasure. And I know you're going to answer all these questions for us that we have on how we can really solve our optimization problem. Before that, let's start off with how did you get to where you are?
Yeah, so I've done about 7 or 8 startups through my career. I've kind of been a startup junkie, and I've co-founded 3. After my last startup, a company called EcoATM, that it's like an eBay in a box. It's a little kiosk that you may have found in malls to trade in your iPhones or old phones. But after that company got acquired, UC San Diego asked me to come on board as an entrepreneur in residence to help them commercialize technology, because they get about $1.3 billion a year in grants. And they create a ton of IP, but they don't necessarily know how to commercialize it. So I went there, and that's where I, among the other people that I worked with, I also met the two inventors of the MEM computing technology, Dr. Fabio Traversa and Dr. Max Deventre, two PhD physicists. Yeah, absolutely. You know, Einstein smart, just brilliant guys. Showed me the technology. It looked absolutely incredible. And it really looks like it and it is. Proving that it is a groundbreaking new compute technology. And so we were like-minded in wanting that to see the light of day and be commercialized, and decided to essentially form the company together. And we've been working on it ever since.
Amazing. Sounds like you've got some serious talent working on what's really a hard and complex problem, right? I think it's such a new thing. A lot of people might not know a whole lot about quantum computing. I was wondering, just to start off for our listeners, can you explain a little bit about what it is and how it's different from conventional computing?
Sure. I'm happy to talk a little bit about quantum, but just so you know, MEM computing is not a quantum computing technology. It's non-quantum. And it is it's actually a brand new technology, but it's one that can be realized in silicon using current technology and the way that we build chips today. But it's completely different than our current chips. And so quantum is a whole new approach. It's another fit. So it's physics-based approach, kind of like MEM computing, but quantum has been around for 2 to 3 decades where people are working on it. Still, it's in its infancy. But what they're trying to do is harness the power of the atom in order to use it to do computing. And what's really interesting about it is that with what they call qubits, you actually have the ability to have, you know, our current computers are ones and zeros. Qubits actually have one zero or neither. So it's essentially three states. And one of the key things about qubits on how powerful your quantum computer can be is, sorry, the dogs are wrestling in the background.
On how powerful
your quantum computer can be is when you entangle them. That means when they're all together. So people talk about quantum computers and they have a number of qubits involved. The number of qubits isn't as important as the number of entangled qubits. So in the entangled qubits is really what gives you the power. And the way that essentially entangled qubits have this thing called, it's quantum entanglement, but it's where any qubit, no matter where it is away from another one, it can feel what happens to another qubit. And so it's this, everything is being worked on all at the same time. And so therefore it's able to, or ultimately will be able to solve problems in just, you know, real time in fractions of a second. And but the issue for quantum computing is that to entangle the qubits, there's a lot of error checking and other things that you have to do. And it's really, they have to kind of build it up. First, you start with two, and then you go to three or four. And so I don't remember the exact number today. I think it's at least 28 qubits that they have. Let's even say it's 128. But the issue is they can't get much further than that today. And they actually need millions of qubits to be connected in order to really be to solve problems at scale that industry sees. And that's why it really is probably 5 to 10. It's always, it's about 10 years away. It's sort of been 10 years away for the last 20. But they're trying lots of things and somebody may make a breakthrough.
Great. Well, I'm interested to know what kind of industry problems this can be applied to. It sounds like really great technology. A lot of big companies are working on it. I read about Google, IBM, Intel making some big news headlines. But where do you see really the first concrete applications coming?
So about 80% of the problems that quantum computing is going after, and I should say MEM computing does as well, it's the same market, and we can talk more about that, but it's really on the optimization side. So optimization in the form of routing, scheduling, analytics, those types of problems where you have large numbers of inputs and each input has a constraint or multiple constraints. And then you have to find the optimal solution where you satisfy all of the constraints for all of the inputs. And that's the issue with those problems with conventional computers is that in order to, let's take a route. And so like for FedEx to find a route for one truck, to find a route that has 120 deliveries, the only way to get an optimal route is you actually have to calculate every single permutation of all those routes. Wow. And then you know by comparing them, which one was the best one. Mm-hmm. But you can't find that out unless you do, with current technology, unless you do all of them. Quantum computing should be able to cut through that. And MEM computing does cut through that. Already. So we've been addressing those types of problems for the past couple of years.
There you go. You can solve my transportation problem then.
We solved it for a lot of people. Yeah, a lot of companies.
That's quite amazing. And I know you guys are, when I read an article yesterday, you wrote you're cloud-based at this point, which is even better, right? But part of the article, and I encourage anyone that wants to learn more about this, please go on the Mem Computing website and read this article. What I read yesterday is there's a traveling salesman problem. So what is that? And it seems like the most difficult problem to solve. And how will Mem Computing solve this?
Yeah, so we've addressed that in many times. And the traveling salesman problem is essentially you have a salesperson that needs to visit a number of locations. And let's say it's a traveling by plane. So the constraints for something like that are, you want to get to each of these places as fast as you possibly can, the most optimal route to hit them all and get home as fast as you can. But if you're taking planes, well, now you have, depending on where you're going, you can't necessarily go from A to B because there might not be a connection. So you have to figure out where the connections. Then you have to know, okay, it's a person, so they can't go 24 hours a day. So you kind of need to know what hours they can travel and, you know, work. You then have to know, okay, if I'm going to go to these places, what are the convenient times? And if the meetings may already be set up and already have the times. So you have all these things that you have to make sure everything is satisfied. And so this is one of those problems that really it's impossible to solve today. It's really what they call intractable. It's not impossible to solve, but you'd need years and years and years to compute it.
Oh, cool. Pretty important problem for what we're seeing with DoorDash, Uber, FedEx, Amazon deliveries, and even now drone deliveries, right? I can envision a time in the future when we have millions of drones doing deliveries, and now we've got to figure out which drone should make which delivery. Just seems like a nightmare of a problem. Is this something that you think Mem Computing would be able to help with?
Yeah, in fact, we already have. So one thing I should state back to the traveling salesman problem. So where I said it's impossible to solve it today, I mean, it's impossible to solve it optimally. So people are obviously solving these problems. Salespeople are getting where they need to go. Amazon is dropping off all your packages. They're just not doing it as optimally as they could.
Right.
So, and the drone problem is very similar. It's actually kind of a multi-traveling salesman problem. So we have done already a working with an aerospace company. They have a swarm of drone problem. So how do you manage and route a swarm of drones where these drones don't interfere with each other? Each has to have their own mission. And their mission is probably if you think from a military perspective, they're probably in the same general area. And it could be for reconnaissance or viewing or what have you. That could be imaging. It doesn't necessarily have to be dropping of bombs or something. But so they all will cover a certain area and you have to get them there. And they all come from wherever they're stationed. They're probably not all together. And so you may have... Right. You know, dozens of drones or hundreds of drones that need to get to a certain place. They have to do it in such a way that they never collide. You don't want them to collide. They might, though, depending on the drone, actually travel the same path, right? But you have to make sure that they don't hit this point at the same time. And so that's another, it's a very hard problem. It's harder than the traveling salesman problem on its own. And so it's actually one, though, that we've shown that we can solve today with Mem Computing. And it's a problem that for, I think it was 40 or 60 drones, it took us 10 minutes to do the computation using our cloud-based solution. So on the cloud, we have what we call our virtual Mem Computing machine. So we virtualized our solution. It's been available since 2019, and we're solving for companies these types of problems. And in fact, it's designed so that it's even free to evaluate. So it's kind of like a software as a service mode where people can go up, create an account, and where we say we solve these big problems and solve them really fast and optimally, you don't have to take our word for it. You can upload your own problem and test out the system.
Wonderful. So you don't have to have your own supercomputer or...
Correct, yeah.
I understand some of these computers need to be kept very cold or in kind of special environment, right?
Well, that's actually another one of the issues with quantum. So quantum computers have to be kept at near absolute zero in a vacuum that is even stronger than space. So, you know, one of the issues to think about with quantum computing is, you know, computers break. Well, if a quantum computer breaks, a service person cannot climb inside the quantum computer room or they will die. Right.
Yeah. Got it. Wow. Let's switch gears a little bit now. You've said that you were part of 7 startups, 3 you had co-founded. I want to pick your brain a little and try to understand from a business and marketing and HR perspective, what have been your challenges in raising funds, hiring people, creating POCs, working with corporations, developing pilots, and kind of the overall industry over the last couple of years with COVID and the semiconductor shortage?
You know, it's been so easy. Yeah. Right. So yeah, it's been really difficult. COVID was a challenge. So our markets are transportation, logistics, oil and gas, and the Department of Defense. And oil and gas, both transportation, logistics, and oil and gas were trounced on through COVID. So a lot of our clients that we're working with, we had lots of projects that we were doing in the beginning of 2020 that had already been set up and started that we kind of completed. But then these companies, you know, they went through huge layoffs and things. And so then for like the last half, so from May until October, everything that had been sort of planned was put on hold. So 2020 the last half of it was scary for us. But luckily in October, people started coming out of it, companies started coming out of it and getting their teams back together. And so then we got really busy. And 2021 has been insane because all these projects that got pushed back were really maxed in what we can work on today. So, I mean, that's the challenge for a lot of startups is that the companies that, if you're B2C, the companies that you're working with, they were affected by COVID as well. Yep. And, you know, the definitely hiring is really difficult now through COVID. The by moving everybody remote, people aren't in the hubs that they used to be in. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of companies that are having to really, they've gone remote and they're going to stay remote, or there'll be a large percentage of people that are remote. Now that's a hard, we are actually remote right now because we haven't hired anybody in the last few months, and probably be a couple months before we hire again. But once we start hiring, because the science behind MEM computing is so deep, we actually are going to need to go back in the office. So we're going to have a challenge in finding people who are still, so we're in San Diego. So finding people that are still in San Diego that didn't go somewhere else, and or people who would want to relocate. And while San Diego is a great place to relocate to, the issue right now for employees is it's risky. You pick up and move somewhere else, quit your other job, take a new job. What if another pandemic, you know, we don't know what's going to happen now that we've gone through this, right? So, so there's a lot. So what's hurting companies or, you know, making it difficult to hire people is there's so much uncertainty still. Right. And also, you know, honestly, for the thing that affects us from a startup perspective is the, you know, the people are having to pay a premium to get people to come in, you know, and change and make a change because, you know, if they get the premium and they do get laid off in 6 months, then hopefully they've got a little bit of a nest egg to back them up while they find a new job.
Interesting.
Absolutely. And doing the pilots also facing the same problem, right?
So that's coming back a lot because now, oil and gas took a big hit in 2020. But if you look at oil and gas now, especially when you're at the pump, they're making up for it.
And then it's always there.
Our relationship with the government has continued to grow too. And if you talk about transportation logistics, which is what we do a lot of on the commercial side, the government does a ton. You know, Air Force, Navy, they move people, machines everywhere. They're the biggest logistics company in the world. What's funny is right now with what we're doing for actually the Air Force Space Directorate, which is now Space Force, and NASA, is all stuff that's not related to transportation logistics. Most of the work we're doing is actually related to satellite process, the computations and optimization that's required for satellites. Because we kind of got introduced to the space side. And so now we're trying to get around and say, hey, but we can also help you on the logistics side as well. And so we're pretty excited about where we could go with the government as a customer.
That's incredible. Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Neat.
Yeah, I thank you for your time today. A lot of great insight. I learned a lot. This was incredible. But I'd like to find out, what is your advice to new grads and professionals that want to enter your industry?
So I'm a startup junkie. I've been doing it for pretty much my whole career. I really recommend to new grads to try to join a startup, because there's a lot of things that they'll get. And this is actually what I tell every single new hire that I bring into any of my startups. I've always told them, I guarantee that by the time you leave this company, you'll leave richer, but not necessarily monetarily. Because the experience will be fantastic, because you get exposed to the business that you wouldn't get exposed to in a big company. In a big company, you're going to have one job, you've got to do it, and you got to do it well. In a small company, you're going to have 17 jobs, and you've got to do them all well, and you're going to be exposed to business meetings and funding. You know, my whole staff, if they're not in the meeting, which is a lot of times I bring them in, they're going to hear about what, I let them know how things are going, so they understand where we are in funding and what have you. And so and that's really how I got to where I'm at, is because doing all these startups, I wasn't a CEO. This is my first time as a CEO, but I absorbed all that through osmosis so that I knew how to do this job. There's a lot I'm still learning, but I knew the basics of how to do this job. And so, but what you also may learn is you may have a horrible experience in startups. And what you can learn from that is, I still think is valuable, is if your startup fails, that you're new grad that you join into, well, you may not be still, against startups. You may have seen, oh, well, the CEO was a bonehead and did this and the other thing. And, right. But when you learn what causes your last startup to potentially fail, if you're still interested in interviewing with another startup, you know what questions to ask them to make sure they're not doing those same things wrong. And so it makes you a better, you're going to do better and better each time you go to a new startup. But even if you choose, that was hell, it was too much work, and I want to work for a company where I have a steady paycheck and, good benefits and don't have to worry about anything, then that's valuable too. That you've learned that. And so now you know where you fit and if startups are something that you want to do.
That's great advice. Thank you. That
was wonderful. Terrific. Yeah. So pick a path where you're going to learn the most that'll serve you in the future. That's great advice. Well, thank you so much, John. We always like to finish up with something about your hobbies. And talking today, I noticed you have two things you like. You like dogs.
Yeah.
Cool. Very nice dogs. And I noticed some guitars in the background. Do you play guitar?
Yeah, I do. Although I'm a better guitar owner than a guitar player, but that's probably true with most guitar players. You always want to be better.
And what kind of music do you like to play?
So I'm a dinosaur rock guy. I like classic rock.
Okay.
I try to play, my favorite songs to learn and play are, Clapton songs, old blues songs, Zeppelin songs. There's lots of strong guitar in those. Actually, the one I'm working on now is George Harrison's song, "The While My Guitar Gently Weeps." It's a nice song from a melody perspective, but then after one of the fun things is then you break into some lead, and so that's the part that I'm trying. The melody I figured out. Now the lead, I've got to figure out how do I replicate some of that, or at least make it sound okay.
That's cool.
Very cool. Yeah, sounds like fun. I think you should have done our podcast music.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Intro song that we like to play before our podcast.
Yeah.
I think we'll advertise that come here now that John's better than Carlos Santana on LinkedIn.
Well, John, you mentioned in San Diego. So I want to ask one more question because I spent some of my teenage years in San Diego. Favorite sightseeing place in San Diego? What do you think?
You know, that's harder when you live here, but definitely I guess it would be the beach. It's just, I live about 5 miles from the beach, so it's easy to go. I've got a 13-year-old daughter and she wants to be there, every day as well. So
wonderful. Yeah. Mission Beach was one of my regular spots, and Balboa Park too. Always love
it. Oh yeah, Balboa Park is fantastic.
Yeah.
If any of our listeners, the zoo, we're members of the zoo.
Wonderful zoo. Definitely. Yeah. Those are spots to check out if any of our listeners are planning to visit San Diego anytime soon.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, thank you very much for being here. Really appreciate it. And thanks for everyone for listening.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, John.
Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed this episode of Mobility Now.
Don't forget to like, subscribe, follow, and share with your friends.